My best friend showed up in her pickup truck. I jumped on the back of it for whatever reason, I don't know. She gunned it and I flew off the back. And they said you could hear my head crack against the pavement over the truck, like the sound of a baseball bat, because the back of my head was the size of a cantaloupe. They only had me in the hospital 4 days. So the minute when they released me, I still didn't know what year it was. It was 2014. I had told them it was 1983. I didn't know my name. I didn't recognize anything. But they released me because I didn't have healthcare coverage.
This is Mindset Reinvented.
I'm excited to welcome Beckett Johnson to the show. In 2014, Beckett survived a traumatic brain injury that gave him just a low chance of survival. And with no health insurance and limited resources, he had to reinvent himself from the ground up. And fast forward to today, Beckett is an intuitive life coach. He's a podcaster and he's an artist. And he's revolutionizing the personal development space through what he calls Becketing, which is his unique method of authentic truth telling. And he's taken his darkest moments to become a beacon of hope for others. And he's here today to show us how to turn our challenges into opportunities for real personal growth. Beckett, I couldn't be more excited to have you here, buddy.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. That was quite the intro.
Well deserved.
I'm excited to be here and talk to you about it.
Yeah. And I love that this is our second opportunity to chat. And, you know, your story to me is fascinating. And you're very blessed to have overcome what you've overcome and to do the things that you're doing, especially going from a traumatic brain injury and surviving that to reinventing yourself to being who you are today and a guide to many, many people. So I find that incredible. Can you take us back to that moment of what happened to you that caused that brain injury to begin with?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember it. And that's, you know, your brain's way of protecting you. So I've been told, and the doctors have also warned me, don't try, because then you'll have PTSD. So it's kind of fascinating in and of itself what the brain does to protect us. But I was coming in out of town. I was living in Calgary, Alberta, in Canada. Had come into Charlotte, North Carolina, was going to wrap up some loose ends. And because I used to live in Charlotte before I went to Calgary, so I needed to wrap up some loose ends, take care of some things. I was going to stay with a friend. We went to a storage facility, mine, to get my bed, to bring it to my friends. And apparently, my best friend showed up in her pickup truck. I jumped on the back of it for whatever reason. I don't know. I'm guessing we were goofing around. And she gunned it and I flew off the back. And they said you could hear my head crack against the pavement over the truck, like the sound of a baseball bat breaking. And it stayed what they call a closed wound. So I would have been actually better if it hadn't stayed closed, because the back of my head was the size of a cantaloupe from, you know, the blood that was coming. And they just said the pressure within my brain was building. So I was rushed immediately. I had, I guess, apparently not to be graphic, but blood coming out of my nose. Then once they said it started to come out of my ears, they're like, we got to go. And so I was in ICU that night with a 1% chance of survival and hoping that the pressure stopped or they were going to have to. They came out and I told my wife at the time, if the pressure doesn't stop, we're going to have to drill. Hopefully it stops. And then they had warned all my friends and family that the person that went in and the person who comes out probably won't be the same, and they need to prepare themselves for that.
My goodness. And so a lot of that you don't have any memory on.
I have no memory. I don't even have memory of coming into Charlotte. The last memory I have, because I had driven from Calgary to Charlotte, was we stopped in Asheville and got lunch. That's the last solid memory I have of that day. And then anything after that was like flashes. Like I have flash moments of being in ICU and seeing my wife, but I didn't know that was my wife, sitting in a chair sleeping, or flash moments of being, you know, getting ready to be put into a CT scan because they had me in a neck brace. They thought I broke my spine. So they were concerned. So they, I guess, had me in a neck brace that I kept trying to take off because they weren't sure that I hadn't you know, severed that and what was going on. So it's only flashes. And even I never had a moment where I woke up in the hospital and went, what am I doing here? Or what happened? That didn't happen.
So with such a low survival rate, then obviously the doctors intervened. You had a lot of probably good fortune and good luck that things didn't go in a different direction for you. But what then occurred? So how long were you in the hospital for? And then when you recovered, or at least the journey to begin recovery, what was that like for you? And how did you overcome some of the challenges about that?
Honestly enough, and when I tell people this, they get shocked. Because I didn't have healthcare coverage, they only had me in the hospital 4 days. So the minute when they released me, I still didn't know what year it was. It was 2014. I had told them it was 1983. I didn't know my name. I didn't know my friend. I didn't recognize anything. And so they released me because I didn't have healthcare coverage. So I was in ICU for 2 days. Once the pressure stopped, miraculously it stopped. They never had to drill. But I still was not knowing. And they pretty much was like, well, he's alive and there's not much else we can do with it. Bye-bye.
That's a really sad set of affairs, that our healthcare system will expel somebody that needs, obviously you needed more care than just 4 days.
Yeah.
And to expel you out of the hospital because you couldn't financially afford it is a travesty.
Yeah, it really was. And even my mom was like, what do you mean you're letting him, like, he doesn't even know his name. And they're like, well, there's nothing more we can do. And really it was nothing more they were going to do. And what I had found out later was I should have had a whole team assigned to me and working with me, which didn't happen. And that's why if I didn't have my friends and family there, I would probably be a homeless person and not cognitive enough to even know to take care of myself or to eat, you know what I mean? Like there's a part of me that wonders like how many homeless people, and I think I read a statistic somewhere where they're learning have brain injuries. Because they literally would have wheeled me out and went, bye-bye, have a good day, and I didn't even know how to function.
Yeah. Well, and so you had a good support group around you, people that cared about you and loved you to be able to guide you. So at what point did you start to regain your sense of, okay, I know who I am. I know the people around me, who they are. And then you started piecing some of the things together. Do you recall what that transition looked like to you?
This is always a hard part to tell people because it's not super clear. It's like you kind of come out of this fog.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Daily. Because when they released me, they had told me you can't take more than 15 minutes of stimulation a day. And stimulation, what people don't realize is that's lights, that's voices, that's not only your screens, it's talking to people. My brain at that point was between like around a 3-year-old, 0 to 3. And so, and if I had overstimulated it, it was going to do more damage. I slept a lot. And then I started. So if you and I were talking for like 5 minutes, I would have been in the bed for 5 days. Just from 5 minutes of conversation.
Is it the energy that you're putting forth that the brain is not able to handle?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because people don't realize like even driving takes so much brain stimulation, right? Because you're on the gas, you're making sure no, and you're looking at other cars, you're driving, you're trying to figure out where you're going. That's a lot of energy and stimulation to the brain. So whenever your brain has to process, it's too much stimulation. And so for me, it was very minimal. So I just realized like that would slowly get less and less. And so I would slowly start to come out of it and go, okay, now it doesn't take me 5 days after talking to you for 5 minutes. It might take me 3. And that took months. I mean, it took months of me just, there was times where I would look back at the first few months and go, I don't even know how I got through that. I don't know how I was living. And luckily, a friend of mine where I was going to stay ended up letting me stay there for over a year. You know what I mean? To help me get back on my feet and get back into life. So it was a weird reawakening to life. And you're trying to figure out nobody, you know, I didn't know what a traumatic brain injury was. I never heard of it. And so I wasn't even supposed to be on the computer. And I just started searching traumatic brain injury. And at that time, there wasn't a lot out there. And I found one group and they happened to, it was talking about yoga and brain injury. And I didn't care about the yoga, but I was like, maybe they know something that can help me. Because I don't know what I do from here. You know what I mean? How do you live now?
Well, you're playing your own doctor out of necessity. doesn't seem like you had any medical, nobody checking in on you from a medical perspective since you left the hospital. So, you know, Dr. Google.
Right.
Right. becomes your new source of insight on what not to do. Of course, the doctors say don't use Dr. Google because it'll make you crazy and a lot of information out there is not accurate. So then it took you a while to regain your sense of self and your really everything about where you were and your sense of purpose. So what then are some of the lasting effects that you have right now from that brain injury? I remember when you and I were talking last and you had indicated one of the things that you don't have a sense of anymore is taste.
Yeah.
And is that
completely gone?
Is that 100% of the way or is it part of the way?
The only thing I can taste is berries. I have no taste or smell.
Oh, you don't have smell either. Okay.
No, I lost out of that injury. I lost 90% of my hearing in my left ear because I hit my temporal bone. So my inner ear shifted. So I have to wear a hearing aid. I lost my taste and smell completely outside of berries.
Is it any kind of berry or is it just?
Yep. Any berry, blueberries, raspberries, strawberries. And in the beginning, I couldn't tell you what berry it was. Or cherries. I got flavor. Now I can tell you what berries they are, but. And it doesn't matter what kind of berry. I can at least, like, when I recently, about a year ago, went to Montana and Wyoming, Yellowstone, they had huckleberries. And I had never tasted that. So it was like, woohoo! I was excited because it was like a new flavor and a new taste I could have that, you know, 11 years, you know, if I didn't have to eat, I wouldn't.
So many questions for you about this. Because we take for granted the things that we, by design, we all, you know, have a great meal and we taste it and we feel satiated. We hear, most of us, out of two ears. Those are blessings that we all take for granted. Is the fact that taste is limited to berries, is it due to the tartness of it?
They don't know. They're all of us, that's the interesting thing about brain injuries is they're all different. And, you know, I've met hundreds of people. I've worked with hundreds of people of brain injuries. And I think I only know of one other person that lost their taste, yet he had his smell. So there's another conundrum. Because technically, right, medical, they tell you if you can't smell, you can't taste. Yet he can smell, but he can't taste. So it's, they don't know why. They don't have any idea. And that, you know, both of my neurosurgeons, when I finally could get back and get some help because I had to move and all the things, they were like, I'm going to learn more from you than you're going to learn from me.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure of it. But having lost both of those, the sense of smell and then the sense of taste, if I had a choice between the two of them and neither one are great choices, I probably would want to keep my taste and give up my smell.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way too?
I actually, it's a struggle for me, especially having experience, because smell was a big deal for me. I love like fresh cut grass or a campfire or your partner's perfume or, you know what I mean? Like, you don't realize how much these things play into our society. So for me, people have asked that and I said, I don't know. You know what I mean? Because both have their place. And for food, a lot of people are like, it's taste, but I don't know. I struggle with that one because sometimes I'm like, I would want my smell back.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that you don't have to smell anything that's foul.
True.
So there is a silver lining to all of this, right?
There is. My nephew doesn't like that. You know, when he tries to be, you know, do the whole jokey thing and to come over and do something and fart or whatever. And I'll be like, that doesn't work. And he's like, oh,
right. Try again, buddy.
Right.
You need to do something different because you're not going to get under my skin with that.
Right. And, you know, he forgets. He's like, it's like, doesn't work. So that's a blessing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I'm thinking in my mind, I'm like, if I lost my taste, to me, taste is so incredibly important. And I know it's important for you and for everybody else. But if I had to choose between the two, it's fascinating because if I didn't have taste, then that would mean I could actually eat foods that don't taste good, but are actually healthy for you. Some plant diets.
It's
horrible to get down.
Yeah, but you think that. Everybody says that. It must be so easy. I go, it's not. Because here's the thing. You still have cravings. Your body still craves food. You just can't satiate it. And you become texture based. And even that now has gotten boring for me. Whereas a lot of the healthy foods don't have great texture. There's not a variety of texture. So you get bored. Do you know what I mean? So people don't realize, they think it's just the taste that you're involved with eating, but it's really not. And even one of my friends, who's a nutritionist and an herbalist and all the things, made me realize at one of our retreats was, you know, right before you eat, when you smell food, that triggers the enzymes in your digestive tract to start because it knows you're getting ready to eat. Mm. Well, I don't have that. So my body isn't triggering. So people don't realize that, yes, it's taste, but it's texture and it's smell. And it's all those things that are making you enjoy that meal beyond just the flavor.
The senses. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So before moving, and this is a topic I could probably do a full podcast on with you, because I absolutely love it. But we do want to cover some of the things. But in my mind, there is absolutely no taste at all. You put a piece of steak in your mouth, it just tastes bland. If you put vegetable soup that's loaded up with spices and yummy stuffs, you don't taste a thing. It's just flat.
It's just flat. I will say this. I taste the basics. What I don't taste sour at all, for whatever reason. Like my friends have given me like a fistful of Sour Patch Kids. I was like, okay, try these just to try to trigger. And I'm like, I got nothing. But I get like the salt, the sweet, the bitter. But I'm just getting those. Like, there's no flavor. It's either salty. Like, I didn't like olives. I've never liked olives. So I'm like, well, maybe I like olives now. No, I don't. Now it's just still eating like a salt cube. It's not, you know what I mean? It's even alcohol. There's the alcohol residue I get. There's no flavor. So I'm not a big drinker anyway. So it's like, there's no point in eating these things. So that's about it. That's all you get. So if it's like a cup of coffee, you're getting a bitter cup of coffee.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Beckett, that's incredible. And of course, it spawns so many questions. I'm just going to limit it to one more before we move on. So aside from taste and smell, have you noticed any, and of course you're hearing, have you noticed any differences in the way that you think and your cognitive abilities?
Yeah. I mean, initially my cognitive abilities were, you know, I struggled with a lot of short term memory. Like, if you would have shown me a pen, I couldn't tell you what it was. My mind would literally just go blank, or you and I would be talking and you would see me stop. And it's because my brain just went, there was like nothing there. And it just took some time. Again, it was the processing and the stimulation that it needed to build back up. So I played a lot of I Spy games, you know, to get your brain to work around that. So since then, I've been very blessed. I think at this point in my life, cognitively, I'm pretty good. I just know that when I get tired, when I get tired, I can tell my cognition goes down a little bit. You know what I mean? I won't remember things as much, but I would say overall, I'm doing pretty well. I was really blessed with that. It would have been helpful if I would have had the treatments I needed, but I got what I could, and the damage was minimal. So that was a good thing.
Good. Real good. And I didn't have a brain injury, but I know my cognitive ability starts to slip away from me. So, short-term memory, long-term memory. There's sometimes a blur between the two of them. So then let's talk about how you pieced everything together to move forward and create a new pathway for yourself. So how did you move forward with things? And then ultimately, you know, it's kind of a two-part question, but you developed a unique method called Becketing. So what in the world is that? Talk to us.
Yeah, my friends named that. But to answer the first part, you know, I think it was a process, and finding that group that I told you about who had the yoga, they were the start of that. You know what I mean? It was like, okay, I don't know anything about a brain injury. And I was supposed to have a team. I was supposed to have a therapist and a physical therapist and all the things. And I didn't have any. So I had to be that on my own. And they really were this organization that honored brain injuries and brought other different modalities in. And my view was, as long as it's not going to hurt me, let me try it. Let me just try it. I don't care what it is. I'll try it. So I tried a lot of unique and different things. And, you know, what I realized, it came down to the foundation was your mindset. I remember coming down to the kitchen. We were in Vermont where we had this retreat, and one of the speech therapists said, we were just talking about you. And I said, okay, why? And she said, at the time there was 25 survivors and their caregivers there, because you could go for free. She said, all these 25 survivors, you're the only one that you don't have a caregiver and you haven't had a medical team helping you. And so not only are you learning to heal as a TBI survivor, but you're also being your caregiver, and we don't understand how you're doing it.
Yeah.
You know, we're just blown away. And she ended up taking me under her wing and sending me books and working with my memory and really helping me. So it was a process, but I understood the base of it was my mindset. Right. And I remember being in there, and one of the guys there said to me, listen, think of it this way. Pain is inevitable. Suffering, though, is a choice.
Amen.
Right. Yeah. And so I had to pull myself back and mentally go, where this is painful and this is hard, but where am I adding more suffering to this that I don't need to? And how can I shift my perspective, what little perspective I have in moving forward? Okay. Don't know what happened there. Yeah. I don't know why though. It was fully charged. Anyways. So that's really what happened, and where I started to now move forward was just like, okay, you know, I don't need this to be suffering. I just got to move with where I am and get to where I'm going. And where Beckett came out of was actually from my friends. My friends had started to use my name as a verb. And I was like, they're like, well, I'm beckoning. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And they said, you have this way, and even some of my clients, of being really honest with us and with other people in a way that jars you enough to get you to look at your own mindset, but isn't like condescending, you know? And what I realized, that was the core of my own healing. If you can't be honest with yourself, and we are very good at fighting for our own excuses.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're fantastic at that. And so it's like, where can I be really honest and truthful? And I had to be with my brain injury, because if I wasn't, I wasn't going to get to where I needed to be. You know, and that's hard for some people, because they're just like, well, I can't do this. But society doesn't accept people with disabilities and with differences. And we don't have patience for the elderly guy that's standing in the grocery line counting money and he can't really get it. You know, we're angry and we're mad because we're like, come on, come on, come on. And that's frustrating for somebody like myself or that person.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
So it's, you have to understand like, okay, this is what I can and can't do. And I've got to find the right tools, and I have to learn to ask for help.
Yeah, you for sure. Cause otherwise you never break through. You'll never really be able to thrive in the way that you are well deserving of. And I think that what you said earlier is really, really key. It's being honest with yourself.
Yeah.
And I think you used the word, some people, I think a lot of us are not honest with ourselves. And partly because, not that we don't want to be honest with ourselves, I think most people don't understand what they're thinking, how they think, the words that they're telling themselves, the narrative that their brains are on remote control, just repeating the same stuff over and over again. It becomes almost you're numb to it. You don't realize, but it's going into your psyche, which is why I always say, to get really honest with yourself, you really have to journal about what it is that you're thinking about every day. How do you feel today? And what do you think that feeling is coming from? Like, did you have any wins today? Did you feel empowered today? Or was today a struggle? If you had some wins, jot it down, celebrate those wins. But if you're struggling today and you don't understand why you're struggling, you got to jot it down. You got to get it out of your head, you know? So being honest and knowing where you are is so incredibly important. I love that your whole mission is about, you know, authentic truth telling and honesty.
Yeah. And to your point, you know, that's something I had my clients do. We call it glory boarding. Right. And there's all different areas of your life that celebrate and look throughout your life and go, where did I win? Where did I do well? Because we're good at it. We live in a society that beats us up. We're good at knowing we can beat ourselves up, even though we may not be honest with ourselves as to why we keep repeating the cycle, right? Or why we want to blame everything else. But the common denominator is you. And we can't control others. You can only control you. So if you're the common denominator, you know, what am I really getting out of this? And understanding that, and that's people. I'm shocked at how many people though are surprised to glory board, to celebrate their wins, because they're like, well, I haven't won. I'm like, I'm pretty sure you have.
Every day we win, and it may sound cliche or, you know, hokey pokey, but every day we get up, we have an ability to live this life that's been blessed, have been given to us from a purely, depending on what aisle you fall on, whether we're a scientific experiment or there was a designer, we're blessed to be here. And it's, and there's a victory there every single day. Even if it's just making our bed in the morning, it's a victory. It's a win. And it usually sets up the rest of the day. So I'm with you on that. I think it's crucially important to take a step back and celebrate those small wins, because they do turn into bigger ones. Now, you talk about something else that I'm fascinated about, and you talk about how to integrate human design and gene keys, again, in your coaching. What the heck is that, Ben? Tell us.
Human design is basically, you know, it's you get people who do natal charts, right? Astrology and whatever you believe, it doesn't matter. We're all energy. We've proven that scientifically. Everything is energy. We're energy. And human design is basically your energetic blueprint. It's like, okay, if you give the date and the time and the place you were born, here's your energetic blueprint. This is the energy that you came into the world with. This is the energy you may not even be aware that you came into the world with. This is the energy that kind of plays throughout your life and how you function and how you move. And it's not a, I tell people, it's not a hard, this is it, right? It's a tool to help you navigate and learn your place and how your role in the world and how you can interact with the other energy and the other people around you. And Gene Keys is the keys to that energy, is the path that you're going to go on in your relationships, in your love life, in your work, in your, you know, what you came here to do, your purpose. And you'll find that when I do these for my clients, their mind is blown away, because they'll always look at me and be like, how do you, I feel like you see me. Like, how do you know this? And I'm like, I didn't do anything. I'm just the messenger. I'm just the conduit. This is it. You know what I mean? This is what is coming out. I'm just sharing this with you because the Gene Keys is showing us the lessons you're going to continually bump against until you learn to find the gift within them. So it's like, I'll give you a real simple example. Everybody, attraction, right? Why do I keep dating the same person over and over again? Well, there's an attraction Gene Key. And you're going to keep attracting these people. Like, for one, let's just say it's oppression. One of my clients, that's what it is. It's oppression. You're going to keep dating people who make you feel oppressed, who make you dim yourself down, who make you want to, you know, maybe be a people pleaser and always want to do for them. And until you learn that, what is this teaching you? Well, it's teaching me boundaries. It's teaching me what I really need myself. It's teaching me to ask for my own needs. But if you're not doing those things, you're going to continue to be oppressed. Right. But there's a gift in that. And once you learn to transmute that, then you start attracting different people. Why? Because you're vibrating for frequency.
So to learn one's gene keys, is that an easier path to determine what those gene keys are for each individual? And then the more arduous task or the longer journey is to reshape the patterns that you're typically in. Is that typically the way it works?
Yeah, both of them go off of the time you were born, where you were born, and the date you were born, right? And it'll pull in this information, and it pretty much, and I tell people that the gene keys are something you can work with your entire life, right? This is just the lessons and the things that you're going to bump into and you're going to see in your life. And it's a lifelong, I mean, that's the point why we're here. It's a journey. We're always learning new experiences, exposing it. So yes, gene keys would, it could take you forever. There's something to contemplate on. There's something to look at and go, okay, where is this showing up? They may ebb and flow. You know, you might be dealing with this gene key for now, and then a different one might come in at a different time. I always tell people healing is a spiral. It's not linear, because I can't tell you how many clients are like, I thought I already dealt with this. Hmm. You did, but on a different level, you know, like a video game. you started at level 5, you're at level 10, and maybe you have the same type of monster, but you're different. You've got new tools. The monster's different. So a different level of healing is ready to come up now and be healed. So don't beat yourself up for it.
Yeah, for sure. It's really fascinating because there's so many different modalities to be able to really work through some of these patterns that don't serve us in our lives any longer. And what you just said is true. So you dealt with an issue and yet another issue, maybe it's similar, but it's not quite exact.
Right.
Reared its ugly head again. And you say to yourself, well, I thought I dealt with it. Well, right. It's at a completely different level. And like you say, it's more of a lifelong journey where we're going to be faced with challenges. We're going to be faced with decisions that are going to impact our lives, other people's lives. And we need to be able to have a clear head in the way we're approaching things. So it just doesn't happen one time.
No. And that's, you know, we got to give ourselves grace. I always tell people that give yourself grace. You know, you may not, and my clients would laugh in a group. I said, you know, cause people don't like to be sad, and we're not taught in this culture how to deal with sadness, how to deal with fear, how to deal with anger. We want to just put rainbows and sunshine over it and go, it's fine. It's good. I'm, you know, even when you ask somebody, how are you feeling? Oh, I'm good. Nobody really answers the question. I remember working in a grocery store and this elderly man after my brain injury would come in and I said, how are you today? And he said, I'm good. He goes, but let's be honest, nobody really cares. And I turned and looked at him and I said, I do. And he goes, what? And I'm like, I do. Tell me how you're really feeling. And he ended up sitting there talking to me for a good 10 minutes. And then ever since after that, he like gave me a hug and he's like, I really appreciated you. Like, taking the time to ask me that. And then every time I saw him, he would genuinely talk to me. And then he would look at me and go, well, how are you?
Yeah. Could you imagine if the human race would follow up an answer, a standard default answer, knee jerk answer that we all give the world? How are you feeling? I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Right.
Right. And then that's where it ends. You took it one step further and he said, nobody cares. And you said, well, I do. And you opened up dialogue for this man, and he probably will never forget that in his life.
Yeah. And it was amazing because he came in with a smile more, and he would ask. And then he said, you know, I've started asking people because, you know, and then I watched my mom do it with this woman who was by the milk section and she was just struggling. And my mom grabbed her hand and said, are you okay? And the woman just started crying and she said, can I give you a hug? You look like you could use a hug. And she did. And she said, thank you. I needed that. You know what I mean? It's really simple. It's just, we, you know, be invested and be present.
That's the key. That's the key. And I think, again, everything, all roads lead back to our minds and the way we view ourselves and others. If it's all about me, 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 then we're truly not serving another human being. And Beckett, you know it. I know it because I've done my fair share of serving others out of nowhere, without any expectations of anything in return. But what I do get in return almost every single time, whether it's helping somebody cross the street or somebody's short at the cash register, or you're on the drive through getting some healthy food, of course, and there's somebody behind you, you pay for their meal, you know, stuff like that. And it just feels really good, especially when they didn't expect it. And they have this moment of, wow, there are really good people in this world.
Yeah. And we need that right now. And, you know, like even affirmations, I say we, you know, and people will say I am, and I'll be like, we are.
Yeah.
Because we are, it is all of us. It's, you know, there's in going through what I went through, it made me realize if I had somebody, I felt so unseen. And a lot of brain injury survivors feel that way. They feel very isolated. There's a high suicide rate with brain injury survivors. It's like 44%. And it's because I don't know how to fit in anymore. I don't, you know, how do I even navigate this? And if, you know, someone had done, and I had people that did that. I had a therapist, you know, who saw me for a year for free. You know what I mean? So it was these people who stopped and invested, and it's like, I can do the same thing. And I was doing it before, but it makes you really realize you don't know what that person's going through. You don't know what they're struggling. You don't know what your simple act of kindness could really change their whole life or even save their life.
Yeah, for sure. Whatever we think in our minds, if we're having a really bad day and we're turning inward, then it's almost like a domino effect. Because if someone comes into our lives, maybe it's a partner, a spouse, a friend, a business colleague, somebody, and it's your first exposure to them for the day, and you're short with them and you're curt with them, and maybe your body language isn't aligned with what's coming out of your mouth. And it's sending a mixed signal, and that signal that is received on the other end isn't always very good. It could very well set up that person's day in a direction that is not what they had intended for themselves. So it's simple stuff, but it's hard to put into practice when, and I say we, because we're all human and we're all carved from the same rock. It takes effort. It takes some intention to make a difference in other people's lives.
Yeah, intention is everything. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you say, you know, it's got to start with us. And, you know, I went through such a dark time in this where just getting up and breathing was my win for the day. You know what I mean? Because I really felt like I'm never going to get through this. This is too much for a human being to deal with. And so what I realized to give myself a break, and that was a mindset, was I'm going to write a gratitude journal every morning. But I was far from grateful. Let me be clear. But what I knew was intentionally doing that practice, the pain and the sadness couldn't sit with the gratitude and the heartfeltness. And I needed a break from that. And so some days it was just, I'm grateful for breathing. I'm grateful for being here. I'm grateful I have a bed to sleep in. And it was hard. I didn't want to do it, but it was like, you need to do this because you need to give yourself, right? This is painful, but let's not suffer.
Let's not suffer. And that's a choice, as you've said. It is a choice.
Yeah.
You know, Beckett, your story reminds me of, we had a gentleman guest on the show, Jason Denon. And Jason, he was a serial skydiver. And if you haven't watched the episode, it's phenomenal. He had jumped out of planes, I think it's 387 times. On the 386th jump, he got to about 150 feet from the ground. And he was whooshed away from this wind that he didn't expect. And he lost control over his parachute. And as he was approaching the ground, he couldn't do anything to keep himself on track. So up ahead, he saw a cattle fence, and behind the cattle fence, he saw a metal airplane hangar. And he knew at that point he was heading right for that. And yeah, so he braced. He approached the metal fence, his chest square on his chest. The metal fence broke in half, and then he hit the metal airplane hangar 35 miles an hour and went unconscious and dropped to the ground. He didn't remember anything until he woke from a coma 9 days later in the hospital. And the doctors didn't think he was going to survive at all. In fact, the entire medical staff said that he wasn't going to survive. But miraculously, and similar to your story, he did survive. Not only did he survive, he changed his mindset to the point where he said to himself, you know what? I'm not going to have anybody outside of me, because nobody knows me better than me, tell me that I don't have any shot at ever walking out of this hospital again.
Yeah.
He had four organ injuries. His heart shifted from one side of his chest to the other when he made impact. It was some serious trouble when he made impact. He ran a triathlon a year after he exited the hospital. All because of this.
Yeah.
And I get goosebumps when I talk about it, because it's very similar to your story in a sense that, and this is my question, do you think that for people to make serious change in their lives, to have an about face and take their thoughts out of themselves and put it on others and be of service to others, do you think it requires such a traumatic experience in your life to have this aha moment? Or, and I hope not, because none of us want to go through any of that stuff. but what does it take, if it's not such an impactful experience like that, to have somebody say, you know what, I'm not feeling good about my life. I don't like the direction I'm going in. I don't like the way I treat others. I don't like the way I feel about myself.
what does it take for somebody to be able to do the work and make some change?
It's a great question. I mean, unfortunately, I think humans, we grow most in trauma and stuff. Some, not all, because there's a lot of survivor groups that I joined that were victimized. Do you know what I mean? That I had to leave, that were like, this sucks. And did it. And I'm like, yes, it does. But how do I move forward? Right? It's that switch in yourself. And I think when we get sick of ourselves, when we really get sick of it, when we really are like, I just can't do this anymore without any trauma. I can't be this person. I can't keep drinking this drink. I can't, whatever it is. It's like, I hate my life so much that I will do whatever it takes to change it. And understanding that, and I think that's the biggest key that people understand, you do have the power to change it. Even if you've had injuries like that guy you talked to, or I've had, where really, physically, people would have looked at us and went, you don't even, we didn't even have the physicality to power through. You know what I mean? Of is like, my brain was not there. Mm-hmm. But you have your heart, of your will inside, and it is that it's the will and the intention, and your brain can do amazing things. And I know I met a woman who said she feels the heart heals the brain. And so it's when you can get in here and go, what do I really want, and what is the life, and what is the person I really want to be, and I'm tired of that, then you change. I mean, when clients come to me, when I get the but, you're not my client, but I can. You're not ready.
Yeah.
You don't, you're not sick of whatever it is you think you're that sick of it. You're willing to walk away. And that's where the truth telling comes in. Cause it's like, what are you getting out of that situation that you really claim you don't like? Because if you really claimed you didn't like it, you'd leave, but you're getting something out of it.
Yeah.
Right. And then that's the key that changes things. Cause people are like, well, I'm not getting anything out of it. Yeah, you are. You wouldn't keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Yeah. So really, the overarching answer is it's a different kind of pain that we must feel that we don't want anymore in our lives.
Right.
And then making a decision that we're not going to settle for that pain any longer.
Yeah, because we don't have to. Mm-hmm. That's the key. You know what I mean? And that's the difference where you hear people say victimization versus be your own hero. You can change anything you want to. You really can. And that's, I think people like him and like me are testimony to that, because when you have all the odds against us, and I've had every odd against me, and I've still gotten to where I am, I'm proof that you can do it. And you don't have to go through what I went through. You know what I mean? Right. It's out there. It's there for you. You just got to take the steps to honor yourself and go, yes, this is what I want. And I'm going to figure it out till I can't figure it out anymore. And then I'm going to take a different step.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. And for our friends of the show, if you're listening to Beckett is just like you. He's just like me. We're all carved from the same rock. We've got blood running through our veins. We have the same set of challenges, the same set of issues. They may look a little different, right? Because we all take different journeys. We're all making different decisions in our lives. But Beckett, you're a testament that through the power of mindset and through the power of intention and taking ownership and responsibility, that you can really change the course of the direction of your life. And then now look at all the goodness that you're giving to others. You're able to serve because you've gone through all of that. And I find it amazing. And that, my friend, is why you're here talking to me, because I have a ton of respect for you. And you're also a heck of a nice guy too. I like you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I really appreciate it. And I say that now. People look at me and I say, you know, my brain injury was one of the greatest blessings of my life. Mm-hmm. I've met some amazing humans and I've learned so much, and I wouldn't change. People will say, would you change it? I said, I wouldn't. I don't wish it on anybody. Let's be clear about that.
Yes.
But it's a blessing. And when you can get to that point, you realize we really can overcome things.
Yeah. Certainly when you're going through it, it's like, oh, why me? And all these things that come up in our minds. Am I ever going to get out of this? You know, but when you get past it and you work through it and you become, you could look back and say, wow, I really have accomplished a lot here. And if I can do it, others can do it. And Becker, we're at the top of the hour here. We're out of time. I could dive into some more things with you, but just in the interest of time, I want to thank you for sharing your story, your insights with us today. And again, you know, everything that you've been through in your life and what you're doing now is a powerful reminder that we all have the potential to change our lives. But we've got to be honest and we've got to be authentic with ourselves and also others.
Yes.
You know, and it not be just self-centeredness.
Exactly.
You know? So before we break free, why don't you, and I'm going to share your contact information inside of the show notes, but why don't you tell everybody where they can find you to follow you and maybe even inquire about maybe some of your coaching?
I would say the easiest place you can find me is on YouTube or Instagram. Those are the two right now. And everything's under Beckett Johnson Co. So I'm pretty easy to find and you'll find my email and stuff and you can just reach out. I'm always here. I'm always available. I'm always on there. So if you ever have questions or just want to talk or just need somebody to listen, DM me.
Yeah, super approachable guys, as you can tell. Take advantage of it. He's opening up his doors for you. Take advantage. So thanks again, Beckett. And friends, keep living your best life, and we will see you soon. Bye for now.